opens wide for Wade. What a dunk! Fournier blocked his dunk.
Here's Wade against Green. Euro step. Basket. And a foul.
Hello and welcome to the Heat Check. My name is Wes Goldberg. With me, as always, it's David Ramil. How you doing, buddy?
I'm enjoying a fine glass of Wade wine.
Oh, is the Cabernet Franc 2013 vintage?
Not quite sure. It's got a little fruity undertone with just a hint of championship success, but without any of the air pretense of some of your other Hall of Famer wines.
Are you picking up a little bit of... $20 million expiring contract on the nose, or
a little bit of that. There's a hint of that too. You're
a hint,
right.
Of a hint of money.
A hint of more millions than I'll ever know.
I have so many questions about that wine. I have so many, because where did it come from is my number one question. Is it a California Napa Valley wine? Is it a French wine? Is it from anywhere else? I have no idea. Why did he launch a wine? Is this a subtle shot at Greg Popovich saying we're going to compete off the court as well in the wine industry? I see you, Greg, kind of thing.
I never considered that. That's a good one. And, you know, I'm also worried about whether or not he's actually crushing the grapes by foot the way they used to in the old days, and that maybe one of the chips of his foot, you know, his toenail polish might fall into the wine. That would be a problem, wouldn't it?
Oh, that black toenail polish. That's right. So I want to know how much a bottle of Wade wine is, because you know that's a ripoff, right?
Yeah, hopefully less than 20.
if that bottle even approaches $15, we have a problem. I think Popovich's wine right now is at like retail for like $20, but that's like a real winery out in like Napa Valley.
I get the feeling that Pat Riley's going to probably buy cases and cases of this stuff just to make Dwayne Wade happy so that he'll take a discount. Next year.
He'll just buy the whole vintage out. That's the deal they made. They just said, look, you just release a wine, we'll buy all the wine, we'll make you a richer man, and we'll just pay you $20 million this year. That's the deal.
It's a good one. Yeah, I like it.
Well, and then Riley's going to come out with his own, probably like just tequila or something, or just something just super hard alcohol, like moonshine or something.
Moonshine. Yeah, Everclear Pat Riley edition.
Just get wasted. But now we know exactly what kind of wine Wade's going to bring to all of his parties. If they're popping champagne after the championship, they'll probably just have a case of Wade wine sitting in the corner that nobody's going to touch.
A little Pinot Grigio after the championship. That's nice.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we all need. But I'm assuming it's a red blend, but that's just me. I have no idea what kind of grapes that they're sourcing, but... I am interested in trying it. I wonder if we get a free bottle for hosting the Heat Check.
I don't see why not. I think you'll have to contact your direct sources in the industry and see if maybe they can bring a case over. And, you know, I'd say our next podcast, once we do get that case, I think we can do boozy observations on the Miami Heat season once we drink a bottle or two.
Yes, we will definitely, once we get a bottle of the Wade wine, we will definitely just drink a bottle or two to the face and then get on the internet and do a podcast. 100%.
Yeah.
All right, so look forward to that, Heat fans. So we got a lot to get to, but some house cleaning really quick. We have a pretty big announcement that we're really excited to share with you guys. The podcast has been picked up by the Hardwood Paroxysm Basketball Network of podcasts. So we're part of the HP Basketball family now. You can find that on iTunes if you just download the HP Basketball Network podcasts. It's like a whole family. It's a whole network of podcasts. They have all sorts of like general NBA topics, things analyzing the draft, analyzing salary cap, analyzing players. Historical podcasts, all sorts of things. We are now part of that. We are actually the first team-specific podcast with the HP Network. So we're really excited about that. We love all the support that you guys have shown us, and now we're just trying to take what we've created here and bring it to a larger audience and just try to get as many ears on this as possible, so to speak. So we're really excited about this.
Absolutely. I think it's a great step forward for us, but most importantly for the listeners. That's all we do it for. I mean, it's really all about the fans. It's always been about them. And I think it's just going to take us to the next step where we can continue to grow and develop and show our progress on a weekly basis.
Exactly. And we also appreciate the support with all the Twitter questions that you guys send our way. We just sent it a couple tweets, maybe a couple hours before our podcast, and you guys are always, you know, spot on, quick to send us some questions. We love answering it Q&A style. We'll get to those later, but first we're going to talk about Miami's backup point guard situation. It's kind of, now that free agency is over, kind of the only position right now that's kind of in flux on the roster. So Goran Dragic obviously is the starter. The Heat have Mario Chalmers, Shabazz Napier, Tyler Johnson, and even Josh Richardson can play a little bit of point guard. There's a lot of guys kind of in the mix there that can handle the ball at the one, and some questions that the Heat face. I mean, it's been reported for a long time that they've been trying to move Mario Chalmers in his $4.3 million contract. Chalmers came out and said today via Ira Winderman on the Sun Sentinel that he's not worried about it. He understands it's a business. I'm just paraphrasing here, but that he's just going to keep doing what he's doing. Are you surprised by that, David? Is that really the only thing you could say at this point?
Yeah, I mean, we never take into consideration the fact that players are constantly being scrutinized. We as fans tend to expect them to always play at a high level and never deal with the kind of stress that hearing all about this on and off over the course of your career might have on them. But what are you going to respond? I mean, you can't blast the organization while you're still a member of the team. You've had such great memories here. You've played here for, you know, going on 7 years now, right? And you know, he's won two championships here. He's had a lot of success here. What's he going to say? You know, he can't make a case for himself publicly at this point. He knows what the situation is. I'm sure his agents have kept him apprised on what to expect. And he knows what the Heat have to deal with as far as trying to cut costs wherever possible. His contract is one of the ones that can be most easily moved because he offers something of value as well. So we take for granted that, you know, these players are going to deal with this they're going to deal with this as well as can be expected, but the result, I mean, is that he's going to give a rather benign, cliched response. You know, you can't really control that, so he'll just have to move forward. But it's interesting to see what the Heat will do because, you know, Chalmers, again, has been a part of the team for so long. So, you know, that $4.3 million is a big, you know, a big factor in their decision.
Yeah, and it's a lot more than $4.3 million once you factor in the luxury tax implications associated with that contract. So they'll save a lot of money. I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but it's something like $10 million, I think, total that they'll save just by getting rid of him. And we talk a lot about it from that point of view. I've always find it interesting how quick, I think it's a combination of two things, but how quick Heat fans are ready to get rid of Chalmers. I think it's number one, this, we've covered it so many times on this podcast. We are Team Chalmers on this podcast. This is Chalmers Island / the Heat Check. We're all in on Chalmers still, right? Nothing's changed?
Absolutely.
Okay, no, just got to make sure. And it's part of this, like, kind of hatred's too strong of a word, but resentment from Heat fans. Sometimes hatred towards Chalmers. And I think there's also, like, this idea that the Heat fans want to save Mickey Arison money for some reason. Like, they're, like, kind of looking out for this billionaire's best interest. It's kind of strange to me that everybody's like, yeah, we need to shed salary tax. I'm like, you know, the Heat can go into the season with this roster. This is a legal roster. They don't have to shed any – well, they have to cut two players because they're at 17 players right now. But you can keep Chalmers. It's not like they're over a salary cap and they have to get under it. They're just going to pay a lot more money for it. I always thought that was kind of interesting that Heat fans kind of kept, like, that they rallied around that idea about saving Arison money. I thought that was always kind of interesting.
Well, that's always the case in labor agreements between players and owners. I mean, that's traditionally always been the way, even though it's completely hypocritical considering what people do on a daily basis, always trying to get more money out of the man or their bosses or their employer, whomever that might be. So it's just funny how that always shifts when it comes to, you know, player and sports arrangements like this. It's always the owners who we feel bad for, who we feel sorry for. Not you and me personally, but the majority of fans, I think, always think that the owners are doing the best that they can to put this team together, ignoring the fact that they are – by and large, billionaires that have more than enough money to pay, as you pointed out, the millions of dollars that go over the salary cap. So I understand their concerns as far as wanting to save money here and there, but you point out, you know, you make a great point. They can't keep Chalmers and just eat the cost, and nobody would be, you know, nobody would look twice about it. I'm sure Mickey Arison could cover the cost with a couple more cruises here and there.
Exactly. And they only, right? He owns Carnival Cruise Line. So it's, the heat is like a side business. It's almost like a hobby. I mean, what we do with this podcast is basically what he does with the Miami Heat. It's like, he.
Yeah, with a lot less merchandise, though.
Yeah, he's not part of the HP network of podcasts. So nice. I think it's pretty even. So we're right there. But yeah, I mean, the point is here that Chalmers, I think it's partly that, it's also partly the resentment by Heat fans, but we always talk about like what should the Heat do, what's in the best interest of Chalmers right now. Is he almost better off going somewhere else at this point? Like, is this like a Norris Cole situation where he might just need to change the scenery?
I don't know at this point. The thing about Mario that's so frustrating, we did talk about this last time, is that he's frustratingly confident and also rather blasé about his issues on the court, let's say. You know, he doesn't seem to really care. He doesn't seem to ever really grow past the boneheaded mistakes when he, you know, bobbles a pass or, you know, throws it out of bounds, or he just kind of gives that, you know, oh shucks, you know that's just a mistake. Those things happen.
I've been thinking a lot about that actually since we talked about this on the podcast last week.
Yeah,
I almost think it's a reaction because he hears the groans. He understands that everybody just says fucking Chalmers every time he does something wrong. Like, he gets that. He understands he's the pinata. Like, I almost think it's, he does that almost just trying to tune everything out. I feel like that's why he seems like blasé, like you say. Like he's just almost disconnected from his mistakes. He doesn't want to overreact because everybody else is overreacting on it. Not to get too psychoanalytical here, but I think that we, as a fan base, pushed him towards being like that.
Well, I mean, look at his career arc. He was drafted in 2008, you know, the second round pick that wasn't as ballyhooed as Michael Beasley. He wound up starting a lot and playing, but he also lost his position over the next 2 years before the big era. I can't even remember who the other point guard options were at this point. I guess Carlos Arroyo for some part of that. You know, there was just, he was starting, then he wasn't, and then he was starting again. So he never really quite had a good grasp on his position there with the team. And then all of a sudden during that first year of the big three era, that continued. Finally, he kind of takes the position single-handedly in the second year of the experiment following the lockout. He was the clear choice to start for the big three version of those teams. And, of course, he's not going to compare to the other players on the court. You even got a guy like Udonis Haslem or Joel Anthony. They do what they do, and they're not expected to handle the ball or anything like that. So you know what you're going to get out of Joel or Udonis at the center position during that second year of the big three era. So nobody, you know, James or Bosch or Wade didn't yell at them or anything like that. It was easy to yell at Chalmers because he was bringing the ball up. He was the one making those mistakes, and he was still a young player at that point. He was a point guard. It's a, you know, typically, historically tough position to learn and to adapt to coming into the league. And so it never helped that he was, you know, always in this kind of vague starter bench position until that second year of the big three era. And so it was very difficult to all of a sudden be in the constant spotlight. And then the players being the experienced Hall of Fame veterans that they are, they, you know, they made him, like you said, the pinata on that team. So I think for those fans that watched that development of Chalmers, they saw him getting yelled at, it was a lot easier just to occasionally watch a game, know he was going to make a mistake, and yell out the, you know, traditional fuck Chalmers every once in a while, fucking Chalmers.
And I mean, this guy was a second round pick, and he's been in the league for 7 years with one team. That is an astounding accomplishment in this NBA. Yeah. I mean, he's been through what? I want to say two contracts now?
His rookie deal, his second deal, and now this one. Yeah, so I think this is his third year.
I mean, with one team, I mean, that is fantastic. He's been one of the top three three-point shooters on the roster for like the last, probably his entire career, honestly. And we talk about that confidence, and sometimes it's bewildering, but it's also like, you got 24 seconds left in the game, you know. Are you going to want Chalmers out there who's confident, Or are you going to want Shabazz Napier? You probably can't hit a shot, you know, in the last few seconds. Or Tyler Johnson, who's undrafted and just kind of more of a gritty guy than he is just a spot-up shooter. Like, there's a place for him on this team, and I feel like Heat fans are so ready to write him off. And I think that's the kind of guy you want on the court, is that confident guy when there's just a few seconds left and you need somebody to make a play. Hopefully you're not relying on Chalmers there, but you never know where that ball ends up in the last few seconds. There's a value that he has.
And it's proven. I mean, it's not like he's just hit the occasional big shot in the fourth quarter or something like that. He's had buzzer beaters. He's had big shots in the NBA goddamn finals. I mean, there's no higher stage than that one. And he's come through. He's had big games against the Oklahoma City Thunder when the Heat won their second championship. So, I mean, these are the kinds of things that you have to consider. Again, maybe we're too effusive in our praise of Chalmers, but he's been a proven commodity for the team. He's going to make mistakes, and it's just something you have to learn to accept, I think, as a Heat fan. I think he's clearly superior to Napier, but, you know, we haven't seen much from him. I think there were some concerns about Shabazz Napier. Okay, let's preface that a little bit more. Could there be some lingering resentment because of how it was perceived that LeBron James influenced the team into making the choice of Shabazz, knowing that he was going to be leaving to Cleveland just a few weeks anyway?
Are we talking about resentment towards Napier now?
Yes, sorry, if I didn't phrase that correctly.
Well, I think there's some, yes, but I think it's less so because it was a 24th pick in the draft, and a lot of fans wanted Napier anyway. I think a lot of fans kind of talked themselves into wanting Napier. Yeah, I think they did. At least on my side. I mean, who else was going to be picked with the 24th pick?
Well, we had the 26th pick, right? And we traded.
That's right, we did trade up.
We drafted PJ Hairston. And then we wound up trading him to Charlotte and getting Shabazz Napier, who they selected at 24th. So
I just think there's less penalty with that 24th pick. It's like a crapshoot. They're like, you know what? I mean, I think there was such a resentment towards Chalmers anyway. Like there was a need at point guard. It was a clear need at point guard. So I think a lot of people were okay with Napier. I don't really sense a lot of resentment for Napier right now. I think people were frustrated and impatient with Napier, but I don't sense that resentment. Like we're talking about Chalmers. I do want to move on to Napier a little bit. We'll talk about the whole point guard position, but just kind of like a final closing thought on Chalmers is that we talk everything like we support Chalmers, but we will also understand if they get rid of Chalmers, right? Like we get where that's coming from.
Yeah, no doubt.
But I think us understanding if Chalmers leaves and us rooting for Chalmers to leave are two very different things. I think a lot of Heat fans right now are the latter. I think they're actively rooting for Chalmers to go. And that's what's weird.
It is. Considering his experience with the team and the fact that he was a starter there for some really huge moments in Heat history, you'd think they'd be a little bit more tolerant of it. It's not like he was a liability that cost them those championships or anything like that. I mean, they won with him in the lineup. It's something that you have to take into consideration. So,
right. Save for the last finals. But there was a lot of things going on with that team. It wasn't just Chalmers.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of blame to go around. It didn't fall on Mario.
Right. So, but let's go to Napier. He had a really good summer league in Vegas. Didn't play in Orlando so much at all. I can't quite remember. All the games kind of get confusing. But
he didn't play in Orlando. He played four games in Vegas.
Right. And he was very impressive in Vegas. He was hitting 3-point shots. He was much more comfortable running the offense. Seemed not so impatient with the shot, was willing to just kind of facilitate and let his open shots come to him instead of trying to force something every once in a while like he did as a rookie. Not a great mid-range shooter still. That part of his game has not improved. But he's a facilitator. He's a three-point shooter. He's a below-average defender because of his size, but eager. I'm going to use your word again, right? Or earnest. You said earnest. I love that. Earnest defender. He's kind of closed the gap a little bit. I mean, he's played in summer league. We haven't seen Chalmers play this summer. So we kind of assume that that gap's been closed a little bit, especially when you consider what a backup point guard has to do, which a lot of times is just not screw up. So that almost makes Chalmers, who's making more than twice as much as Napier, more expendable. And that's kind of where the battle is, I think, in that Heat front office is. They want to try to offload Chalmers. But the other report is that they're aggressively shopping Napier as well. I'm assuming the idea is to trade one of them, not both of them. Is that what you're assuming here?
I am, But you bring up a good point. You talked about the fact that Tyler Richardson is also an option, and we haven't, Tyler Johnson, and we haven't even brought up Josh Richardson, who is not part of that 17-man roster at this point. He's still unsigned by the Heat. So there are options there. Should they trade both Chalmers and Napier away, which seems very, very unlikely. Although I'd say that, you know, Napier and Johnson both have the same level of experience at this point. Maybe Johnson played more games overall with the Heat. I'm not quite sure at this point. But, you know, Josh Richardson offers them a defensive-minded point guard option. Tyler offers some explosiveness at the point guard position that both Chalmers and Napier lack. So there are other options there. But I would say that in their hierarchy of who they're looking to move first, it's probably Mario Chalmers just because of the $4.3 million contract.
Yeah, and I understand where they're coming from. They want to try to move Napier. You know, you drafted him to potentially be the starting point guard. He's not going to be that now with Dragic there. And you figure sell high as possible on Napier now. He was a former first-round pick. Maybe there's another team that was high on him coming out. They're willing to take a flyer on him, and you could trade him now. And he is making more than Tyler Johnson and Josh Richardson at this point. Josh Richardson doesn't even have a contract, but if he was to sign, he would be making less than $1 million, I believe. So Napier's making like 1.4 or something like that, I want to say.
Just under that,
right? So it's like right around there. So there is value to moving Napier as well, but I agree with you. They'll try to move Chalmers. If they can move him, then we're looking at probably Napier as the backup, and then Tyler Johnson as the third string point guard, and then Josh Richardson fitting in potentially somewhere else on that roster. Could potentially handle the ball a little bit. Justice Winslow can handle the ball a little bit. Then there's the option of not really having a backup point guard and staggering the minutes between Dragic and Wade so that one of them are on the court at the same time, or one of them is always on the court. So when the other one's off the court, the other one's handling the ball as the point guard. So basically Wade could be the point guard when Dragic is out, I think is another option that way. And that might be the best way to get like the best five or six guards on the team is to actually have Wade be the backup point guard. If you don't really believe that, if you want to keep Richardson and Ennis and Tyler Johnson, none of them being like real true point guards, and you want to get rid of Chalmers and Napier, that might be an option.
I just think that, you know that Goran Dragic has a history of back trouble.
Right.
He's going to miss some games. He's not going to start at some point next season. Who would you rather see in that starting lineup? You know, Mario Chalmers or Shabazz Napier? And I think it's a pretty clear choice, to be honest with you. Not necessarily a knock on Napier, but I just don't see him as being a starting quality guard in the NBA at this point. And you know what you're going to get out of Chalmers. He's got some size. He's definitely got a size advantage over Napier. He's got the long-range shooting ability. He's familiar with the players and the offense. He knows how to work within the system. And he's probably a much better defender. I mean, his ball-hawking skills aren't elite by any stretch of the imagination, but he's a much better defender at this point in time than Shabazz Napier, who's undersized for the point guard position. So, knowing that the Heat's window is limited and that they have some high expectations for this season as they look to maybe knock off the Cavaliers in the Eastern Conference, you know, I don't think that you can have a guy like Napier being your second option at point guard.
And especially if they want to compete. And I wonder what is likely to happen now, because the Heat are clearly trying to move Chalmers. And from recent reports, they're willing to do it for as little as a second-round pick. I'm wondering what's going on where they can't find a trade partner for Chalmers. Rumored second-round pick isn't right, unless they're asking for cash, if they're asking for something higher than a second-round pick. I don't know what they're doing, if they have multiple offers and they're just trying to play other teams off of each other. What's going on? I understand being patient, but I also see, like, Summer League's over. You have all the intelligence you need. Why is this not? If they're going to move Chalmers, it's kind of weird that it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, it could be just overstated rumors and absolute bullshit. I mean, we don't know for certain. You know, NBA insiders, we haven't heard anything officially from the team, and nor would we. Usually where there's smoke, there's fire. But, you know, a report that we just saw earlier today, we were discussing before the show, Josh McRoberts, who has been frequently linked to a number of trade rumors, apparently hasn't been shot by the team at all. So, to your point from a few weeks ago, you know, McRoberts is certainly an enticing option at the power forward position. He can play a little bit of the small forward. He can play a little center. He's a skill set that the Heat want to build around, and they want to include him in the future plans, and it makes sense. But, we had always thought that maybe he was going to be traded and that he was going to be gone for the team, and you were looking to move that $5 million salary when he signed last year, et cetera. And now it turns out that the Heat aren't moving him at all and haven't, actively done so. So, we're taking these Chalmers rumors as fact when in reality they may not be. And it might be more along what you just hinted at earlier, that Napier is a guy who's still relatively unproven and maybe could entice a team. He's got a relatively flexible deal. It's another 3 years left on his contract for he's got a kicker in the third year there, $2.36 million actually in 2017-18. So he's on the books for another three seasons. But let's say it's not a deal that's going to break any team if you try to move him. And maybe you might want a guy who's an experienced ball handler, a big shot taker, as he proved in the NCAA finals, et cetera. So maybe somebody thinks highly enough of him that they'll be willing to take a flyer on him, as you said earlier.
And the reports that we're hearing are that they're aggressively shopping him. And I wonder if they're aggressively shopping either of these guys. That's what I'm saying. It's kind of strange that they haven't been able to move either of them yet. So I don't think it's as black and white as that, as maybe it sounds, right? Is that maybe Mickey Arison is willing to pay the tax if they don't get enough back, if they feel like Chalmers is of more value here than whatever that they're going to take back, maybe they decide just to hold on to Chalmers and go for another championship here. Maybe they value him that way. It might not just be black and white saying we need to get rid of Chalmers at any cost necessary. So we really don't know where the Heat stand kind of on that spectrum of how aggressive they are trying to move Chalmers or Napier.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll probably hear some developments over the next month before training camp. I mean, if they're going to move one or the other, they probably would want to do so. Well, we're going to have to hear sooner than that because they have an immediate decision to make on Josh Richardson. So either he's going to be part of the team moving forward or he's not, and that would probably shape what they plan on doing as far as their point guard battle is concerned.
Right. So there's still a lot going on. There's a lot of guys kind of in the mix here. What do you think ends up happening, if you want to do a prediction really quick, with the point guard position?
I have no idea. I mean, I think there's been enough buzz about Chalmers being moved and he's a more expensive option. I think you and I clearly don't want to see that happen. But I don't want that to influence my predictive abilities. But at the same time, I guess that's the person that they're most likely to move.
Yeah, it makes sense. I think that I think he ends up getting traded. I think that Napier stays and Tyler Johnson takes that third point guard spot and Josh Richardson sticks to the roster somewhere else. But we'll get to that right now. How about we take some Twitter questions?
You got it.
All right, so first Twitter question comes from NBA News 2342.
Nice.
Tweeted us, will the Heat keep Josh Richardson? My money is saying yes.
Yeah.
I think they were very impressed with what he was able to do. They tested him in Orlando. They tested him in a different way in Vegas. In Orlando, it seemed like they let him just be a wing defender, defending twos and threes, kind of let him roam a little bit, see what he can do, take up guys at half court on defense. And then on Vegas, they tested him a little more on offense, let him handle the ball more, shoot a little bit more. His stats were great. He shot, 38% from three, from beyond the arc. He was averaging about 11 points a game. He was very impressive. I think he's got a spot on this roster.
Yeah, I think, you look at the way that the team is always rated him very highly. We talked about it before that he was I think he was a first round pick in their eyes. That's how they had him rated, as a first round pick. He fell to them in the second round, and it made a lot of sense for them to take him. He's smallish, right? But he's a decent ball handler, a very active defender, and you did point out his shooting was a big plus. I guess that wasn't an expected thing before he joined the Summer League team, but he did all right. I mean, I'm looking at it now, his statistics, he shot almost 39% from three in Summer League. And he did play 10 games, started six of them, had a big final game there where he finished with 23 points against Sacramento. So, those are pretty impressive outings. He had some weak ones. I mean, one game he only scored 2 points in 23 minutes, but he only took three shot attempts. He had four steals in that game, though. So clearly you're seeing, like, the total package from him. And if he's a relatively inexpensive option who you can continue to develop, I'd say absolutely he'll be part of the team.
As we know, there's always room for 3-and-D wing guys on the Heat, right? So he can hit three-pointers, as he showed in Summer League. He's got experience handling the ball from Tennessee, where he went to school. In Summer League, he showed an ability to do it. There's a spot for guys like that. And we talked, I think, a couple weeks ago about the Heat's kind of bottom tier of that roster, maybe not having a niche, not having a specialty. And Richardson offers that on the defensive end with substantial ability on offense to just not be a one-trick pony. So he has a specialty. He has a niche on the roster. I think that's when we talk about Eric Spoelstra having that quote-unquote bullpen that he always refers to his bench as, that's kind of what they're looking for, is if they need somebody to be able to come in, you know, guard a guy for, you know, the full length of the court, that's, they'll bring in Richardson.
And I'm seeing his height listed at 6'6". Is that accurate?
I think he's anywhere from 6'4 to 6'6". I think he could defend anything from the... He could defend small forwards, I think.
I mean, maybe he's strong enough, but from what I saw, you know, live at Summer League, he didn't look no 6'6'6 to me. I mean,
yeah,
I didn't see it anyway. But anyway, that was surprising. I didn't think he was that tall, but maybe I misjudged him from a distance. But anyway, you know, another point I think somebody brought up to me
was he standing next to Joshua Smith by any chance when you saw him?
No, I wouldn't have been able to see him, right? But, you know, but Justice Winslow, he's listed at what, 6'6 also?
I've seen him listed between 6'4 and like 6'5 and a half to 6'6, yeah.
Okay. Who knows? Because, yeah, 6'6 is not accurate. And he was standing right next to me at one point. He's not 6'6. That's a whole other issue.
Yeah, we can have a whole podcast about measuring things.
Something to consider, though, somebody pointed out to me, is that the team's already selling his jersey, yeah, which is very rare for a second-round pick. I mean, this is clearly something that they want to include on their roster. Maybe that was at a time when before they added Amar'e Stoudemire and Gerald Green, and maybe the whole roster wasn't fleshed out to the point it is. Maybe they didn't know they were going to be filled to capacity and over capacity at this point. But, I mean, that seems like an unusual marketing move for a team that's usually pretty savvy and you know, pretty restrained in that regard. So I guess he seems to be part of their future plans. So you can assume that he's going to stick around with the team.
Yes. And one thing to note is that he could play overseas. The Heat could sign him and send him overseas so that he would spend a year like they did with James Ennis, where Ennis played in Australia for a year. They could do that same thing. They would be able to keep 15 guys on the roster in the States while also having the rights to Richardson wherever he plays overseas. That's a possibility. They need to sign him to September by a September 5th deadline, or else they lose his rights. So there is a bit of a deadline here, but I do think, I'm with you, Dave, that I think that he ends up being on the 15-man roster here. I think he's much more polished than Ennis was coming out of school. He's got a niche. He's got a spot that he can contribute on the roster, and not walking into a big three era Heat team like James Ennis was that final, his first year. It was the final year of the big three. So moving on to next. What?
Sorry, that sounds like a perfect segue to me.
A perfect segue to
discussing James Ennis.
There we go. By Randy Rose with three A's on Twitter. Thanks for reaching out. He asks, why do the Heat continue to hold on to James Ennis? He says the guy has no shot, no handle, time to go our separate ways. All right, Randall. Well, I think they have until August 1st to make a decision on Ennis's partially guaranteed contract. I think his contract becomes partially guaranteed on August 1st, so there's a little bit of some room here. They're not going to just cut him outright if they don't know what's going on. I think there's just too many other potentially moving pieces. We talked about Chalmers, possibly Napier. I think they're going to wait to see how many guys that they can trade and unload. There's still a possibility of Chris Anderson being moved. We haven't really talked about that. That rumor's kind of softened a little bit, but that's still something that's been kind of milled around a little bit this offseason, so maybe that's still a possibility. So I just think that the Heat aren't going to cut ties with him until they are forced to or decide that they are ready to, right?
Yeah, it's, you know, we should probably preface that, you know, we didn't expect Ennis's position to be in jeopardy prior to the summer. We thought we'd heard from the team that he was working out. There was footage of him, you know, putting up shots and working on his ball handling at American Airlines Arena before summer league. And so we, you know, looked at that and said, well, these are the areas where he needed to really cement his reputation and really continue to develop. And it looked like he was doing that. And then he goes into summer league, apparently suffering from a little bit of knee tendonitis from reports from, I think, Barry Jackson, the Miami Herald said so. And so he was a little limited as far as overall health was concerned. And he just performs, in his words, terribly. Like, it was his worst summer league showing in 3 years of having done so. He was horrific, shot 11%, I think, from three-point range, a number of turnovers. And the picture that we're seeing from the media and the reporters that have been covering the team in summer league, especially in Las Vegas, are that he's just broken at this point. Like, his confidence is shot, and he can't seem to bounce back from it. He actually was quoted after the, I think their fourth loss in summer league to an Atlanta team. You know, he said he was playing terribly. He just had no answers. He couldn't figure out. He couldn't get out of his head. And then the next game, he goes and plays even worse. He misses all eight of his three-point attempts, has seven turnovers or something ridiculous like that. Just a terrible, god-awful kind of game. So you have to figure at this point his confidence and his psychological composition is really, really affecting him. I mean, there's no other word for that. I mean, there's no other way to look at it. You know, he's clearly got the talent. He showed a lot of promise last season. And so you wonder what's going on with him. And I wrote about it earlier because I think, you know, maybe assuring him a roster spot is a kind of confidence booster that allows him to take that step back towards where he's supposed to be. But you wonder what's going on with him. I mean, it's so weird because this is like it magnifies the business aspect of dealing with player personnel so much more because this is a guy who's clearly struggling here, you know, psychologically, emotionally, whatever. But he's playing so badly that you're forced to make this decision whether or not he's worth keeping. So it's a real significant issue there. But you also have to look at the fact that, you know, he did show promise. And then I think Barry Jackson also mentioned how in certain lineups he really thrives, especially alongside Goran Dragic once he was acquired via the, you know, midseason deal there. So, you know, he's a good running mate for a guy like Dragic. You know, the Heat were so bad offensively for most of the year. And so they're looking to pick up the pace. And a guy like Ennis, as athletic and quick as he is, would certainly be a good piece. But on the flip side of that, and I'm sure you're going to bring this up, you know, they've acquired Gerald Green, who matches that ability, who has experience playing with Dragic. They've also got Justin Winslow, who's clearly a very fast, quick player and maybe has a lot more potential, plus has a bigger contract that you have to honor. So there's so much going on with here, and you just don't know what's going to happen. But it almost seems like Ennis's tenure with the Heat is done.
I agree. I mean, they have too many guys above him in the hierarchy right now. As it stands, he's probably not going to play, you know, even if he makes a 15-man roster. So you're holding on to him. When you talk about guys on the roster that aren't going to be that core 8 to 10 guys or 9 or 10 guys that are going to play every regular season game, you're looking at guys that offer some sort of upside. That's when we start talking about Josh Richardson. Maybe, you know, Hassan Whiteside was that last year, right? And then he got his chance. Those bottom of the barrel guys who just offer something, Tyler Johnson even. Or they have a specific niche like James Jones was. He was just a niche 3-point shooter. James Ennis isn't that. He plays fast. Yeah, he's hardworking, but that's not really a niche. You don't know when to go with him. Like, when do you need somebody that's just hardworking? Like when you need like that spark plug off the bench, I guess. When the team's just kind of milling around and not really and just being lazy, I guess. But I feel like the Heat have so many of those guys right now, like Tyler Johnson, like Udonis Haslam. So I don't know. I feel like there's not really room for him. Do you want to invest all that time trying to, you know, better his ball handling with do you want coaches spending all that time with him where they can be spending time with Whiteside or Winslow or Richardson or Napier? I just I don't see really a spot for him, and it's a shame because Heat fans really like James Ennis, but it seems like it was just kind of going ever since that dunk over Rasual Butler. It's almost just been downhill since then, right? Like a few ups here and there, but really just, you know, looking at the graph, it's been going down. It's been trending downwards. It's tough, and you know that he really cares because, like you said, he's been beating himself up over it. The Heat recently paid for him to go train at the P3 Peak Performance Project training facility in California. So there's an investment on that side. Just because the Heat get rid of Ennis on the 15-man roster, chances are Ennis is not going to be making a fit, not with that summer league performance. He's not getting a guaranteed deal on a 15-man roster. I just don't see that happening. There's potential there for them to keep him in-house and sign him back to the Sioux Falls Skyforce. And you wonder if they will keep him around, or that's their intention, right? If he gets a guaranteed deal somewhere else, great. Good job, James. We're happy for you. Willie Reed type situation, great. We're glad we got you on that platform. Good for you. Go off and make your money. But, you know, you could still develop him in that D League. He's got potential. He's got the physical attributes. He's just not ready for the NBA right now. And maybe you put him in the D League where it's less competition. He can maybe stand out a little bit more, start building that confidence back up, get back to where he can get to a point where his confidence is not an issue and he can focus again on improving the skills that he needs to improve on. That might be the best for both sides.
Yeah, you're right, but you know, you have to look at the fact that they have that August 1st deadline to make a decision, and then secondly, the D-League type competition, that's who he was facing in Summer League. This is a guy with NBA experience, man. You figure he should have played above them. He should have been dunking on guys left and right. He should have been dropping 30 points a game and sat out after Orlando. But instead, he was turning the ball over. He wasn't shooting well. I mean, 0-for-8 from downtown. That's horrific. You know, that's not a guy who's shown any kind of promise whatsoever. I mean, he hit 2-of-3 on one game. I'm looking at it right now, and then after that, not much else. I mean, it's just it's sad. No, I'm sorry. That wasn't even him. That was Josh Richardson. I don't think he's had a good productive outing all summer league. You know, long. So it's. And through 7 or 8 games, I think that he played in, and I know he's battling some injuries. So maybe that's the way of overlooking his faults. You know, you could say, well, he's going to get healthy. He's going to be able to go along and you know, be a part of this team moving forward. But you have to also look at who's behind him and who could possibly be ahead of him in the lineup. And like you said, you know, do you want to invest that kind of time on a guy like like Ennis, who may not have any upside at this point?
And we talk about his injuries. I don't buy that as an excuse just because we look at where he was at last year. He wasn't a great shooter last year. He wasn't a great ball handler last year. I don't believe that injuries prevented him from being good because he wasn't good when he was healthy at those things. So maybe he wasn't able to develop or improve in those areas either. But again, like we're both saying, do you want to invest that much time in a guy that might not even make the roster? And if he does make the roster, be like the 14th or 15th man. Which leads us to our next question by Tabakin NBA. Tabakin asks, who would you take between Josh Richardson, Tyler Johnson, James Ennis, and Henry Walker? That's a good name to throw in there. We haven't talked about Henry Walker on this podcast, I don't think.
No.
And I think the reason for that is obvious. He's pretty much gone, I would think.
Yeah, I think he's going to follow Beasley's path out of the team. Off the team and out of the league at this point.
Yep, and so I think we've just written off Walker. Between Richardson, Tyler Johnson, and James Ennis, I think we've also talked about James Ennis enough, so this is really between Richardson and Tyler Johnson. And if we do have that, that could realistically be a decision that the Heat have to make, right? And that's a really tough one because in a vacuum, I would take Richardson.
Yep.
But considering what's going on with the team, they would have to cut Tyler Johnson and hope that he doesn't land elsewhere in order to maintain to re-sign him to maybe the Skyforce or send him overseas or something. I don't know if they could do that, but they would have to cut him and hope he doesn't get picked up somewhere else in order to keep him in-house, so to speak, and keep him on the D-League team. Whereas Josh Richardson, he can keep Tyler Johnson and then sign Richardson and send Richardson overseas for a year. Or if a roster spot opens up in the middle of the year, bring him back to the States if they need him. So they would almost have to not make a decision as much if they were to keep Tyler Johnson and send Richardson overseas. The problem with that is that they don't get to use Richardson in the NBA and that obvious skill set that he has. At the same time, how much are the Heat going to use either of those guys if those are one of the 14th or 15th or 13th guys on the roster? Chances are they're not playing more than just a few minutes a game, if that. So I think that the more efficient, maybe more savvy decision here is to send Josh Richardson overseas, sign him, let him play in Australia or Europe or wherever, and keep Tyler Johnson on the roster until some other things kind of trickle out or something happens or they're able to move, you know, another contract maybe in the middle of the year or something like that, and they're able to bring Richardson back in.
I think that's a perfect response. I mean, you're absolutely right. In a vacuum, I think because of his size and his skill set, it looks like Richardson probably is a better fit for the team, but there's so much that has to play out before training camp as far as who do you make, do you trade somebody, who do you bring aboard, etc. So I think and you can't overlook the fact that Tyler Johnson also has got that jaw injury. Mm-hmm. He's expected to be back by training camp. At least that's what early reports have indicated. So maybe that plays into the decision-making process as well, though. But you do know what you're getting out of him, and he's a cheap option. Somebody that has a lot of effort, makes, you know, he's always giving effort, has some upside, you know, showed flashes last year. Is a good, solid overall player. He's got a lot, he's got some upside to him, and he is a hard worker. So you don't want to cast off guys like that because they, you know, they've grown up through the system, they've made progress, and you want them to continue to do so. You don't want to cut ties with them and have that investment all be for nothing.
At the same time, though, because Tyler Johnson has that jaw injury, the Heat can cut him and almost not, like, who's going to sign Tyler Johnson with a jaw injury? You know?
Yeah. I didn't want to point that out, but that's the very cold side of the business, isn't it? It's like, oh, sorry, you took a shot in the face in Orlando.
Right.
Now you're out of a job.
Trying to fight through a screen playing full court defense. But at the same time, they could cut him and then sign him to a D-League. They could probably be pretty comfortable cutting him with the idea that they're just going to re-sign him immediately, but to the Skyforce, to a Skyforce contract, not a NBA contract. Tyler Johnson would be losing a lot of money if that were the case. That's the other thing, is that he'd be losing all that guaranteed money that he's due on August 1st. So that's the nasty part of the business.
It is, unfortunately, but necessarily so.
Moving on to our last but not least question on Twitter from ZachJ_98. Zach Jacobson writes, if the Heat beat the Cavs and advance to the finals, do they have enough to beat a team like Golden State or San Antonio? I could go with a one word answer here. I'm gonna say
yes.
It's yes. No. It's no. Unfortunately, Golden State's loaded, and San Antonio just signed LaMarcus Aldridge. I don't see it. I don't see how. I think that should be the finals this year. I don't even know if an Eastern team should be allowed in. I mean, they look
okay,
stacked.
Let's assume Cleveland re-signs J.R. Smith. They've got Shumpert back. They just signed Richard Jefferson today. They've got pretty much the whole squad there. Kevin Love, Kyrie mm-hmm. Irving. Assuming that they're healthy enough. And if Miami somehow still finds a way to beat a team that possesses LeBron James and all those other talented players, even just the role guys, and still manages to find a way to beat those Cavs, well, hell, then you have to expect that something really blossomed over the course of the season.
Good point.
That Wade is back to his 2008-2009 self. That Chris Bosh is back from lung clots like he didn't even feel them anymore. And he's just knocking down three-pointers like crazy. Hassan Whiteside's averaging triple-doubles every game now. That's since Oscar Robertson, right? I mean, he's just 21-10-10 all the time now. You know, swats left and right. And Goran Dragic is just, you know, a speed demon that finishes at a 65% clip at the rim. And Luol Deng focuses just on defense and embraces the corner three-point shooting mentality that they forced on him last year. And all of a sudden,
Justice Winslow wins Rookie of the Year.
Somehow.
Mario Chalmers has to be involved.
Right. Yeah. Winslow, sixth man/Rookie of the Year, somehow. I mean, I don't, and Amar Stoudemire isn't a problem on defense and is chipping in 15 points off the bench just because he likes playing with a guy that reminds him of Steve Nash. It could happen.
It could happen. But, I will. Okay. You've changed my mind. No. Well, I'll say this. For Golden State got extremely, extremely lucky last year. They were the best team in the NBA, hands down. But they also didn't face a real injury all year. So we assume, as Heat fans, we know that comes back, right? You don't get that lucky for a whole year and then get that lucky for a whole year again. I'm assuming that they're not going to be as healthy this season. That's just how the basketball gods work. And then at the same time, in San Antonio, I mean, we look at Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, Tim Duncan, LaMarcus Aldridge. I mean, that's a stacked roster, right? But then you think, Tony Parker hasn't been the same for about 2.5 years. Manu was basically retired. I think the only reason he came back was because they signed LaMarcus Aldridge, right? And he was just like, let's do this one more time, I guess. Tim Duncan's still great. I mean, but he's getting old, and you wonder if there's going to be more decline on that side. And LaMarcus Aldridge is going to have to fit into a new system and a new way of playing and everything. I mean, he was the man. You know, him and Damian Lillard, it was like a two-man game, basically, in Portland. It was just pick and pops all the time in Portland. It's going to be very, very different in San Antonio. It's going to be a little bit of a while to adjust there, I think. They don't have Thiago Splitter anymore. So, I don't know.
It's not a given that they'll be super successful right away, although everybody seems to think that's the case.
Exactly. So, I think there is a point where we look at that roster and say, wow, it's the Spurs with LaMarcus Aldridge, and it's the Warriors who were just so dominant. How can anybody beat those guys? I will say we should probably temper our expectations with San Antonio because of that decline, because it's kind of a new team, and then assume might not be the right word, but maybe prepare for possible injuries for the Warriors, who kind of got off scot-free last season without any major injuries. I mean, he had Maurice Spates, you know, in the playoffs, but really, like, that's not a major injury. So,
he can't overlook other teams in the West either, like Houston,
Memphis,
and the Clippers. Yeah, Memphis definitely. I mean, those are three other teams that are legitimate contenders, I'd say. Maybe not as strong a contending team as Golden State or San Antonio at this point. But, you know, Houston probably gets better with the acquisition of Ty Lawson if he's able to come out of rehab and be the contributor everybody expects him to be. You know, he doesn't turn the ball over much. You know, he's a good playmaker, etc. He could be a real force there. And they already have, you know, he gets to the line a lot, right? I mean, between him and Harden, that could be a pretty devastating backcourt. I mean, Patrick Beverley was solid when he wasn't hurt, and all of a sudden, you know, he's your third guard. You know, that's not a bad option to have, as Heat fans surely lament. But I don't know. I guess we haven't really answered the question. I know you gave your one-word answer before. Ultimately, do you think that the Heat even have enough to get past Cleveland in the Eastern Conference?
I think, is it possible? Yes, to both questions. Yes, it's possible they beat Cleveland. Yes, it's possible that if they beat Cleveland, that they win the finals. I would say yes, that it's possible. And that's really what the question is asking. Do they have enough, meaning is it possible? Would I pick them? Probably not. Yeah. But is it possible? Yes.
Yeah, I mean, everything would have to align just perfectly. It would have to be injuries on everybody else's roster, and then guys that are veterans like Gerald Green and Amar Stoudemire would have to play out of their minds, and we'd have to get immediate production off the bench from Justice Winslow as well, and you know, to shore up the point guard position. Chris Anderson would have to play great, and all of our stars would have to play extremely well. It seems unlikely that all of those factors will play in there, especially given Miami's own history with injuries. You know, we're one Goran Dragic back spasm away from going on a 6-game losing streak, unfortunately. I mean, because if he's going to be the key that drives this new Miami Heat engine, it could all fall apart very quickly. So, you know, you have to take that in consideration.
Exactly. And overall, the West is better than the East. We know that. Nothing's changing. I think the Heat are in contention in the East. That's the change. And there's a lot of changing moving parts in the Eastern Conference. We could talk about that later on as we get nearer to the season. But it shouldn't be any surprise. The West is still the dominant conference. That's all we have for the Twitter questions. That's all we have for the podcast, I think, David, right?
Yeah, I mean, unless we get a case of wine delivered right quick and maybe we can start discussing.
There's lots of wine to choose from. We don't have to be super specific. We could go, what we should do is just go buy Greg Popovich's wine and then just send that out as a challenge to Wade to send us some wine.
Is that available where you live?
Yeah, it's called A to Z. I think it's available in a lot of places.
Is it?
A to Z wine. They have like a Chardonnay and a Pinot Noir.
I'll have to look for that next time I'm buying a bottle.
Yeah, and then we'll take a picture, we'll tweet it out and be like, Wade, what's up, man? Just challenge him. He's competitive. He'll send us a bottle just to compete, right?
I think so.
You got to tap into that. All right. Thanks for listening to the podcast, guys. Thanks for joining me, David. Check out the podcast on SoundCloud, iTunes. Give us a review, 4-star review, 5-star review. If you don't like the podcast, don't review us, because if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. Check us out on the HP Basketball Network. Subscribe to the Heat Check on iTunes, and you can subscribe to the HP Basketball Network. Our podcast and so many other great podcasts are available via that feed. Check out the website, heatcheckpodcast.blogspot.com, and thanks for listening.
Bitch, you thirsty, please grab Sprite. My crib's lurking, don't die tonight. I just wanna dance with you, baby. Just don't move too fast, I'm too crazy. Man, down the avenue, get shaded. Take a nigga mind off that. We can dip, fuck in the whip, slide right back in the function. One wrong word, start busting. Put that on my Yankee hat. I'm a gangster crib, fuck gangster rap. Where the ladies at? Where the hoes? Where the bitches? Every real nigga know the difference. Bandana brown like the dope daddy shooting in the kitchen room. Northside nigga never went to pilot. What's nigga Brio? Cocaine color of a Creole. T-scrap moving for the D-Lo, we know.
I ain't never ran from nothing but the police. I ain't never ran from nothing but the police. I ain't never ran from nothing but the police. From the city where the skinny kept strong heat, Northside Long Beach.
Northside Long Beach, hit the counter, make a dollar, flip it. Split the dollars with my mama, children. Folks need Porsches, hoes need abortions. I just need your light of my business. Never no problem playing, no bitches. Never no problem spraying, no witnesses. No face, no case, being with the shit. Hopped out broad day, didn't empty clips. Cut glass, cause it wasn't about cash. School wasn't no fun, couldn't bring my gun. No chains gon' come like Obama say. But they shootin' every day around my mom and them.